Come on. We can't have any pulling. You understand? Okay, let's try again, kids. I just said we can't have any pulling. God, did we not talk about this? Testing? Okay. Okay, still pulling. That's my own fault. I got anger issues, kids. Okay. All right. Take two. Hey, kids. This is Rish Outfield, and this is the Rish Outcast. Oh, I had a... what do you call it? An agenda. I had a plan of what I was going to talk about today, and it's gone out the window. This is the second attempt at recording this. I got my little lapel mic. The it's a microphone with a insanely long cord, like 6 feet, that you attach to your lapel. And it had a little clip on it, and my clip broke, and so I would sometimes like tuck it into my shirt, and then it would fall off. But I got this idea of using like a paper clip to clip it to my shirt right under my neck. I figured, well, that'll work. That'll be the same thing that the clip was, except for, you know, lower tech. So I put it on, I started the thing recording, and I tried to put the recorder in my pocket. And remember, the cord is anywhere from 3 feet to 6 feet long. But the cord was tangled and it wouldn't go in my pocket. So when I put the recorder in the pocket, it pulled the lapel mic off my lapel, off the paperclip, and I got angry. I reattached it. I tried to unloop the tangle, and then I put it in my pocket again, and it still was just barely too short. Again, 6 feet of cord. So I gave it a yank. And I broke the microphone cord. Just boop. And yeah, if you know me at all, I break everything. Everything. And you know, my mood has a little bit to do with it. I only had 2 hours. It was just about 3 o'clock, and I had to be somewhere at 5 o'clock. And I got it into my head that I'm going to go out to the lake, just the edge of the lake, and I'm going to record a Rish Outcast. And I'll just walk along the edge of the lake and then walk back to my car and then head back and get home in time for 5 o'clock. And I got my microphone. I made sure I had a battery, and an extra battery rather, and got in the car. The car wouldn't start. It wouldn't start. So I said, okay, I'm at home. It could be way worse if this didn't start out in the middle of nowhere. If this wouldn't start at the lake, that would be different. So I got my sister's car. She was home, luckily, and I drove her car around and parked it nose to nose with mine, and I got my jumper cables out and I hooked up the cars and I tried to jump it, and my car wouldn't start. It wouldn't even try to turn over. You turn the key, it wouldn't make a noise. And I've not had that happen if it's just the battery that's dead. And so I sat in my car, you know, trying to figure out what else could be wrong, and I noticed the radio was playing, which told me, hey, the battery's not dead at all. If the radio is playing, and when you open the door, the light comes on, the dome light, you know that that the battery is fine. So I took my sister's car, put it back in the driveway, put the jumper cables back in my trunk, and I was bummed out. That actually took about 20-25 minutes. I don't know how it could possibly take that long to find out that it wasn't the battery, but that's how long it took. So I still had enough time. If my car would just start, I could still come to the lake, still be a man, do this thing that I wanted to do, which again, I could have done at any time. I've lived here for almost 10 years now, and I've come to this lake 3 times, I think, ever. The last time I was here, it's like 2 years ago, and it was all frozen over. I walked out on it a little ways, you know, like 10 feet or 3 yards or something, and just thought that it was neat. But I didn't come back, and I kept meaning to. I thought what I would do is I would take this recorder and I would walk around the entire lake and just podcast the whole time and say, okay, I'm starting, and we'll see how long it goes before I make it all the way around the lake. And I don't know who I told that to. I think Jeff, my friend, I told him that I was going to do that. And he said, do you have any idea how big that lake is? And I said, yeah, I mean, you can see to the other side. But apparently it's extraordinarily long, even though it's not particularly wide. And he said, that's probably 30 miles. And so, yeah, that's not going to be happening. But I still wanted to do this. An irresponsible me, instead of sticking around and trying to figure out how to fix my car, or calling my dad and saying, hey, here are the symptoms, what do you think is wrong with the car? Which I've had for 5 days, 6 days. The battery is a week old, not even. Instead of that, I asked my sister, hey, is it okay if I take your car and go to the lake? And she said, why? And I said, I only have an hour and a half. I kind of had my heart set on doing this. I wanted to do it. Today was the day I was going to do it. Can I just do it? And she said, well, yeah, sure. But she was weird about it, you know? And now that the adrenaline has worn off, by the way, breaking that microphone, instantly I was okay. It's weird that, I mean, it's stupid now in retrospect, but I remember my laptop, the very first laptop that I ever had, it froze. And I was just like, geez, I was so angry that it froze that I hit it. And as soon as I hit it, I felt better. The laptop has never turned on again. All the stuff that was on it, all of that, gone. Because I couldn't control myself for 1 second, for 3 seconds. But I felt better. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about right here. Yeah, I mean, we could call this episode What an Asshole Rish Is. And you'd be fine in calling it that. I recognize that that's not cool, that, you know, you hit something and then you feel better, or you shout and scream and you feel better. While I was driving to the lake, and holy cow, guys, it took like 7 minutes to get here. It's so close. And yet, I never come. I average, what, once every 3 years that I come to this lake? So sad. But as I was driving, Adele's Rollin' in the Deep came on the radio. And there's the, you know, we could have had it all, rolling in the deep. There's that part. But she's got these backup singers. You're gonna wish you never had met me. Tears are gonna fall, falling in the deep. You're gonna wish. And for some reason, I sang that like as loud as I possibly could. Not screaming it, not Axl Rose, but you know, at the most volume I could get while still singing, you know, y'all gonna wish you never had met me, only louder and harder. Tears are gonna fall, falling in the deep. And I felt a little better. Unfortunately, I only caught 2/3 of the song because, you know, you can't control what's on the radio. Maybe the whole song would have abated all of my frustration. And I wouldn't have broken that microphone. But, you never know. What's done is done, and what's fun is fun, as I think it was Hitler who used to say that. So anyhow, I now just feel a little bit embarrassed, a little bit stupid about leaving, about coming and doing this, when the responsible thing would be, look, I only have, at this point, an hour of free time. I need to use that hour to fix my car, to figure out what's wrong with it, so I can get places. So, you know, there are places I have to go. And I didn't. I selfishly said no. I wanted to go to the lake. I'm going to go to the lake. I wanted to podcast. I'm going to podcast, even though I'm not doing the episode that I needed to do. For once, I have a short story that I've recorded. And I was thinking that I could do an episode for it while I was walking around the lake. Wonderful, huh? But instead, because of my attitude, because of breaking the... Because of that, because of release. Let's call this episode release. Tension reliever, tension catch and release. I don't know. We'll call it something. But instead, that's what we're talking about. Louis C.K. is my favorite comedian. And, you know, I recently had a conversation. Oh, it was with Abby Hilton. We were talking about, there's a plane right above me, obviously. Either that or that's my stomach is making a very strange noise. Didn't like the burrito I had. I was talking to Abby Hilton about fake Sean Connery. And she said, you know, he's amusing, but sometimes he says some pretty mean things to you, some pretty hurtful things, and I feel sorry for you. I feel like, you know, that's not funny. That's just cruel. And, you know, I've watched Louis' show. He's got a show on FX called Louis. And most of the time it's really funny. But sometimes it's just cruel. It's just really mean spirited. And it's always terrible things that happen to Louis, the character that he plays. And he writes and directs and produces and edits and stars in this show. So if you don't like Louis C.K., you're not going to like this show, because it's him, you know what I mean? In the same way that a Woody Allen movie in the 1970s was him. It was who he is. And so there have been times when I've regretted watching Louis, because I feel bad. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for me. I just feel bad. And maybe that's what she was saying about fake Sean Connery. And so, I don't know. I like to make fun of myself. It's a defense mechanism that I learned. I think it was in junior high. Might even have been before that. shoot, here's another tangent. But, yeah, you know what? I'll just talk. That's the whole point of this, right? We used to have a Christmas party, a family Christmas party, every year. On my mom's side of the family, all the Mexicans would get together. Not all of them, because my grandmother had so many kids. She had 11 boys and three... No, 9 boys and 3 girls. And it was just a tremendous-sized family. And we would get together, at least the ones that were local, and we would have like a Christmas get-together, a Christmas party. And it would be expected, if not required, that the kids do some kind of performance, whether by themselves or, you know, like my cousins would do something and our siblings would do something. And one year, and I'd say I was about 11, I decided I was going to do magic. I was going to do a magic performance. And I got in front of all of these relatives and the tricks wouldn't work. I'd practiced them, and I thought they were good, but once I was in front of this crowd, they didn't work. And one after another, they failed. And everybody started to laugh, and they applauded when they would fail. And I was really upset, but I just didn't get why they were clapping. I thought, you know, that... I don't know what I thought. That they just didn't understand, that they thought it had worked and it hadn't. And afterward, either my aunt or my mom told me, oh, we thought that that was the point, that they were all supposed to not work and it was supposed to be funny. And no, that wasn't the case. And I probably cried because I was an emotional, I was still an emotional wreck as a kid. But the next year, the next Christmas, I decided we would have a reprise of this magical character. Only this time, all of the tricks would go horribly wrong. And it would be okay if they laughed at me. And so, yeah, I had the... I don't know if they were the same tricks, but, you know, this is supposed to happen. And then it didn't happen. And each one got bigger and bigger and more humiliating. And here's the funny thing is I don't remember. I was 12 or 13. I don't remember exactly, but I believe that I didn't get as big of laughs when I was trying to fail as when I actually failed. But that was an attempt to laugh at myself. So it didn't hurt when other people laughed at me. And that's something that I have done ever since. It's a defense mechanism. I point fun at myself first so that it doesn't hurt if somebody else does it, or so that when somebody else does it, I'm like, oh yeah, it was funnier when I made fun of me. And, you know, like oppressed minorities will do that. You know, when you call yourself or you say that you're a bunch of, it's okay if you do it. Anyway, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to compare myself to an oppressed minority, guys. I'm sorry. I'm not that. I'm a white male, and we're privileged, and we're the devil. Oh, I should have broken my pitchfork instead of that microphone. Dang it. Okay, well, I know what I'll do next time. I know what I'll do for an encore. Anyhow, Louis puts so much of himself in this show of humiliation, of abject humiliation of himself on the show. And every once in a while there'll be a happy ending, but not usually. Usually it's just embarrassing, or it's mortifying, or it's just sad. And I can relate to that. At the same time, you know, if you don't like him, I can't see this winning you over. Although maybe. In the same way where if, you know, there's somebody that you don't like, a celebrity, and they go on Larry King Live, or they, you know, they're on the radio and they're being interviewed and you're sort of forced to watch it or listen to it, and you get a glimpse into their soul, and suddenly you can't hate them as much. I've certainly found that to be the case. There are three or four performers or singers or actors or actresses that I just didn't like. And then I see them sit down with somebody for an actual interview, not just the bullshit that you get on the late night talk shows where they have 7 minutes between commercials and is, you know, just prepared statements, and the publicist has given the talk show host a list of questions to ask because there's a funny story attached, or there's a punchline attached, or it's a good segue into a clip from their new reality show. So Louis is just really open about the humiliating things that have happened to him, about times when he screwed up, or times when he made a mistake, or threw a fit, or got in trouble, or failed. And it's really endearing, but at the same time, it's often hard to watch. And he was on Conan O'Brien a lot. But, you know, he was on Conan O'Brien several years ago. And that's where I really discovered Louis C.K., that I appreciated his humor, that I liked him. And you can find those clips on YouTube. But here's a YouTube clip from Louis C.K. on Conan O'Brien that I really wanted to share with you because it goes hand in hand with what I'm talking about right now today. And I hope my footfalls aren't so loud that you can't really hear my voice. There's a helicopter in the distance, and it's loud, I guess, but my microphone is 3 inches away from my face, so surely it's louder than the helicopter. But holy cow, it's a beautiful day, guys. It's probably 77 degrees, 75 degrees, the warmest day it's been the whole year. This is 2016, I'm recording this one. I know I'm still getting out 2015 episodes, but... Oh, there's another helicopter. See, there's a tiny little airport just right here. I don't know, 6 miles, 5 miles from where I live. It's such a small airport that there are very limited places you can go, number of flights that come into it. And yet, you hear planes all the time. Sometimes when I'm recording my audiobooks during the day, I just have to pause because you hear an airplane. And then I talk for a little while, and then I have to pause again because there's another airplane. And that's a reason why I should never record during the day. But oh well. I'm just going to stop for a second and play the Louis C.K. clip.
You know, underneath everything in your life, there's that empty, forever empty. You know what I'm talking about?
That. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I.
Yes.
Yes, just I know
that,
what you're talking about.
That knowledge that it's all for nothing and you're alone. You know, it's down there. And sometimes when things clear away, you're not watching it, you're in your car, and you start going, oh, no, here it comes, that I'm alone, like it starts to visit on you. You know, just the sadness.
Yes.
Life is tremendously sad just by, you know, being in it. And so you're driving, and then you go, that's why we text and drive. I look around, pretty much 100% of people driving are texting.
Yes.
And they're killing, everybody's murdering each other with their cars.
Yes.
But people are willing to risk taking a life and ruining their own because they don't want to be alone for a second because it's so hard. I was in my car one time, and a Bruce Springsteen song comes on. And it made me really sad. It's like Jungle, what's the one, Jungle song?
Jungle Land.
Jungle, this one where he goes, hurry! And he sounds far away. You know, I was like,
that's half of them.
Yeah, that's a lot of them.
No, he goes, Nene Ho! Like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Except for it was Springsteen. If it was you doing that, I would have been like, what the hell is that in my radio?
I did it just the same
yes.
as Bruce.
And I heard it, and it gave me kind of like a fall back to school depression feeling. It made me really sad.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, I'm getting sad. I got to get the phone and write hi to like 50 people. Anyway, I started to get that sad feeling, and I was reaching for the phone, and I said, you know what? Don't. Just be sad. Just let the sadness just stand in the way of it and let it hit you like a truck. And I let it come, and Bruce, and I just started to feel, oh, my God. And I pulled over, and I just cried so much. And it was beautiful. It was like this beautiful, it's just this, sadness is poetic. You're lucky to live sad moments. And then I had happy feelings because when you let yourself feel sad,
yes.
your body has like antibodies. It has happiness that comes.
Rushing in.
Rushing in to meet the sadness. So I was grateful to feel sad, and then I met it with true, profound happiness.
That's funny, but the funniness is not why I wanted to share this. I'm just going to sit down on a rock here by all these ducks and by the water. I know what he's talking about. I do. I've only told two people this story, but now I'm going to tell you. There was a girl in Los Angeles that I really liked. Really liked her, and I look back now and I don't know what it is that I liked so much about her. She was pretty, yeah. She was cool. Yeah, very friendly girl, and that's not typical. Especially in LA, it wasn't typical. Pretty and friendly rarely went hand in hand there. Which again is my own bias entering into it. She was older than me. And she made more than me at this job. airplane right above me, just like directly above. She had, what do you call that, where you've got issues about your weight? She was self-conscious about her weight, but I really liked her so much. And I don't know what it was. I would light up when I would see her. And there was one time, I think I was on the phone and she walked past and she gave me a nod or maybe even a wink, and it just made my day. It was like, wow, I could be alive. I could actually be alive in this 21st century. Wow, wouldn't that be interesting? And, I just changed my whole mindset because of this girl. I have talked before in generalizations about deciding to get thinner, to get in shape. And so I would go running. And it was around this same time that I decided I was going to lose weight and I was going to be healthy. And, she had a lot to do with that. Anyway, she was quitting that job. And she hadn't told anyone, as far as I know, or maybe I wasn't close enough to her to find out that she was quitting until it was her last day. And it was right before Christmas, and I was devastated to find out that it was her last day. And I had gotten her a Christmas present. It was a copy of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, which is my favorite book. And I made an excuse to my boss and ran out to the car and got in the car and drove to my apartment and got that book and brought it back. Even though, I was still on the clock and Christmas was 2 weeks away or sometime away, and I got that book to bring it back to her so I could give it to her because it was her last day. And I gave it to her, and she was like, oh, hey, that's so nice. She didn't know that I had gone all the way home for it. Nobody knew. And she took off. She cleaned out her desk and said goodbye to everybody, and then she was gone. And I realized I was not going to ever see her again. Not that it was prophetic or anything like that. I mean, I never did see her again, but it doesn't mean that, it was very unlikely that I would ever see her again. I knew that. And I was kind of in a daze for the rest of the day. I was upset and unhappy and just, turning over in my head what might have been and whether maybe she liked me or could have liked me given time. And she did come by and she said, it's my last day. And I was like, oh, that's too bad. I was hoping that we could become friends. And she said, we are friends. It was nice. That was probably the last thing that she said to me. Anyway, I was upset and my shift ended and I probably accomplished very little. And I went out to the car. And I didn't even go anywhere. I just went and I got in the car. I closed the car doors and I cried. I cried like a little girl who had a balloon that popped or her dolly's head fell off or whatever little girls have that traumatizes them. And I mean, it was like a minute and a half of just utter despair, and it poured out of me, a level of feeling I hadn't realized that I had. And then I stopped crying, and then I felt grateful. I felt exultant. I felt thankful that I was alive to feel that much of anything. Of whether it was, pain or pleasure or happiness or regret or fear or whatever it was. I felt alive. An affirmation that I was a human being firing on all thrusters, if you will. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I was just like, wow, I am happy. that I could be so sad. And anyhow, Louis said almost similar, almost exactly the same words there in his thing to Conan. Conan. Louis C.K., what is best in life? Louis said almost the same thing, and I know what he was talking about. I told my mom about this, and I told Abby this story, and I told my mom when it first happened, because it was right before Christmas, and then I came home from L.A., and I told her the story, and she's like, oh, that's sad. You don't know what love is. And she was right. But when I told Abby, it was just this year, and I said to her, you know, that's probably one of my five best memories of the 21st century was that, which is so effing sad and so pathetic. But it was, as I said, a time I felt alive, and it was cathartic, like you wouldn't believe. I was still sad afterward, but I wasn't heartbroken. I wasn't just overcome with regret or feelings of what might have been or any of that stuff. I had had this experience, and then I moved on, you know? I was able to move on because I had gotten that out. It was a release. And I feel stupid because I broke that microphone and I didn't have to. Maybe all I would have had to do is sing that song or come out here and walk and sit in the sun and tell this story, and I would have felt better. I don't know. Anyhow, that's my story. That's just, I wanted to tell that. I don't know why. It's not a story that makes me seem cool, or probably doesn't even make me seem like a big dumb moron like most of my, oh, let's laugh at Rish Outfield stories do. It was just a glimpse at me and cathartic despair, cathartic, it was a release. There you go. And so, I appreciate you listening to me. Oh, geez, guys, this might be one of those episodes that I sit on for a while because I don't know if I dare release it. Because, you know, it's an overshare. It's too much. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those where you're just like, oh, geez, was that the wisest course to share that much? And yeah, I don't know if it was or not. But it's out there now. And thanks for listening to the Rish Outcast. And hopefully I'll be back again soon with a better episode, with more of a glimpse at the light. Fake Sean? What? Just do the Creative Commons. Ah, yes. The Rish Outcast has been produced under a Creative Commons attribution, non-derivative 3.0 license. This means, go ahead and share it with the people you despise the most. But you can't sell it. You can't alter the file. Not that you'd want to. Would you? I mean, really? Did you hear this thing? Did you hear this boy spilling his guts to you? Just for once, I'm going to be nice to him. Good night. I don't know if I dare tell you that I've watched these two ducks in front of us. And the male duck keeps he's trying to rape the female duck. And she won't fly away. She flies into the air, and then she lands on the water again. And then he leaps upon her. And then she struggles and gets away. And then she's an inch in front of him again. I don't know if there's a moral to be had there, but it's yet another disturbing moment in this particular podcast. Let's let this go and leave you for another day.